Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
They're longtime friends.
Let me tell you something real quick about dibs that I'm sure not everybody knows.
And first-time partners.
Hang in there, big guy. There'll be brighter days ahead.
Now these two homegrown Bay Area boys finally come together to take over sports talk.
Get the hell off of my doorstep.
Major League Baseball, you stink.
It's Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back. Oh, got to grab my mic, Mom.
Look at Grandy. He's a pro, but...
There we go.
A little forgetful here.
It's Grandy in for Willard today. Dibs and Grandy with you here on 95.7 The Game. We got a short show because we've got Warriors basketball in Miami. Warriors Live begins at 3:30 here on 95.7 The Game. Tip-off is at 4:30. Tim Roy will take over at 4 here on 95.7 The Game. But welcome in, 888-957-9570. A ton to get to today. Dibs, it's good to be back with you. How you doing today?
I'm doing great, Mark. Doing great. A spirited debate there in the crossover. And, you know, you and Goo against me and Steiny. And I won't go so far as to say that the Warriors don't care about the 10 seed, but I will say that the Warriors, primarily the Rick Celebrini, Steve Kerr duo, I think that they care more about their process than they do whatever the result would be. And if the process says Steph is getting worn down, and I think the numbers, and, you know, we all watch every single game, and I know you watch it even more closely because you're doing a lot of Warriors live and you're doing the post-game show, and so you're taking copious notes and the rest of it, but you watch Steph and you see that he looks like he is wearing down. He's getting a little bit tired. He's played in 64 of the 70 games, and you do have a bit of a gauntlet down the stretch. So they look at the schedule and they highlight the Sunday game as one where, you know, you probably want to ease him back a little bit, and the game situation would dictate, boy, it sure would be nice to have him out there, but you fight the temptation, you stick to your guns, and you play him, what, 7 minutes in the fourth quarter, and you come up just short.
Well, I mean, I guess it's also just an opportunity cost. If what you and Steiny are talking about is correct, and there is a conversation, a medical conversation going on with the use of analytics and numbers related to Steph's minutes and all of that, then it's not only, all right, how much do we care about being the 10 seed? How much do we care about holding off the Rockets? How much do we care about, you know, putting all our eggs in the 10 seed basket? What is that worth to us? But on the other end, what are we risking by doing that? So there's multiple conversations that go into it. So maybe it is not quite as simple as we don't care to be the 10. They would probably, in fact, I feel very confident saying they'd rather be the 10 than the 11. But is it worth the risk that you might run if it does result in an injury to Steph Curry that throws off his dream of playing in the Olympics, that throws off his chance of helping you win next year, 2 years from now, whatever the case is? So I get it. I'm just a little surprised that it took this long for them to go that route. Because, I mean, 2 days before Sunday, on Friday, as we all talked about, Steph Curry played the whole fourth quarter.
Right.
And now you go all the way to the other extreme, and you don't even let him get to the 30-minute mark, 29 minutes and 51 seconds.
Yeah, to me, that's not the other extreme. The other extreme would be you just don't play him at all. And the whole idea of why did you wait until now to do it, it's because he wasn't worn down back then. And if you look at his game log and he had the...
He wasn't worn down on Friday, but he was on Sunday?
No, he wasn't worn down in like February. So you and Goo were saying, why do you have to start it now? And you start it now because of the schedule and the gauntlet that you have right now. And I think that you would have seen him sit out more games earlier in the year, but you didn't have that necessity because of the injury. He had the ankle injury. He missed three games, and he came back, and he's played his normal minutes, 33-33 against Memphis. It was only 24 because it was a blowout, then 35 against Indiana. Then you bring him back for just 30, and I would bet over the course of these next nine games, Steiny's right, nine games in 16 days, he's going to have probably, I would guess, at least one DNP along the way there, and he's going to have at least one other game, maybe two, where he plays 30 minutes.
If they win tonight, do you think they hold him off in Orlando tomorrow?
I don't think it matters win or lose. I think that they have a plan, and I can't really say exactly, and I could look at the schedule, and we could play a little guessing game of when will Steph sit, and I know they don't usually like to do it on the road, right? They like to, you know, give the road fans the treat of Steph Curry, but I think as you get down the stretch, you're going to look at maybe giving him a game off, but I don't think that it's going to matter based on what they do the night before. I think that they're going to have a plan already in place.
So ultimately, maybe it comes down to how much being the 10 seed matters to them. Does it just not matter to them that much?
I don't think they look at it that way. And I hear you and Guru getting stuck on the seed conversation. I think they look at the player. They look at Steph Curry and they say, all right, what's best for Steph? Forget the 10. Maybe we can get the 9. What happens if we fall to 11? Heck, we run the table. Maybe we're the 8. I don't think they look at any of that. I think they look at the minutes he's played, the mileage that he tracks, and they think about what's best for him in terms of minutes and rest.
Yeah, I guess where I'm getting stuck on, this was part of the conversation you and Willard had yesterday, talking about how...
Hey, you were listening. Nice.
Sometimes.
I apologize.
I tune in and tune out, depending on what's going on.
Thanks.
How the answer, the solution to this roster's problems this year is not on the roster. It's not in the house.
Right.
And I agree with that. When you look at it from a wide angle, from a wider perspective, from a season-wide perspective, Steve Kerr has tried just about everything he possibly can over the course of the season. Maybe he was a little late moving off of the veterans. Maybe he wanted a little bit early. Okay, fair. You can think that. I think I probably disagree. But from a wide angle, he has tried just about everything that he possibly can to figure something out. I mean, we have 12 games left in the regular season, and there is still not a consistent rotation. He's still trying new things.
Yeah.
And there's still questions. I mean, Goo just 20 minutes ago had it. Why not give Looney and Sharic another chance? Like, there's still all of these conversations that are happening. All that means is that the Warriors have not found something that works yet. It's taken so long to get to this point where we still don't have an answer yet. So I agree with what you and Willard said yesterday about the solution not being on the roster for the season as a whole. But if you're looking at one singular game and trying to win one singular basketball game, and it was Sunday in Minnesota, you're up by 3 going into the fourth quarter. Minnesota comes out and goes on a 12-5 run over the first 3 minutes of the fourth quarter. You call a timeout. The answer in that singular game, not for the season as a whole, but for that singular game, was to bring Steph Curry in at that moment. That's your answer at that point. And I know that's probably not going to have a major impact on whether you have a successful season or not. But if we're talking about a singular focus of winning one basketball game, Dibs, you cannot convince me that playing Stephen Curry 2 or 3 more minutes does not give you a better chance to win that basketball game. Now, maybe the difference of opinion comes into how much they wanted to win that basketball game or how much they were willing to risk in order to win that basketball game. But if your singular pure focus was to beat the Minnesota Timberwolves on Sunday when you led by 3 going into the fourth, and then they go on a run and you call timeout at that point, if your singular focus was to win that basketball game, you bring Stephen Curry in. But maybe it just wasn't their singular focus.
Well, you're presupposing that playing Steph the final 8:56 would lead to Steph Curry being excellent over 8:56. And that's a supposition that I don't think it's fair to make, because you're assuming...
Better than the alternative.
Well, it turns out that it was better than the alternative. And I'm looking at the log right now. They call timeout with 9 minutes to go.
Yep.
8:56, they're down by 4. You bring in Draymond, you bring in Kuminga. Out goes Pods, out goes TJD. You don't do anything with Steph. Kuminga scores, cuts it to 2. And then from there, it was an Anderson two-pointer. It was a Wiggins free throw. And then Conley and Gobert, back-to-back buckets. Then you call timeout again. Then you bring in Steph. But along the way...
Down by eight at that point.
Right. But you're presupposing that in that stretch that Steph Curry would have been able to do magical things to prevent that from going from 4 to 8 when you bring him back in.
Not magical, but... I mean, he's Stephen Curry. He's still a pretty darn good basketball player.
He is, but
he's not going to commit the turnover that Trayce Jackson-Davis and Brennan Pajemski combined on. He's not going to pull a Chris Paul where he dribble down to the shot clock, has to take a fadeaway, gets blocked, and then fails to get back in transition.
Yep. Well, and the turnover happened before the timeout that you're talking about, and you're not going to bring Steph in before the 9-minute mark.
I'm just pointing out some of the mistakes made by the players that were on the floor.
Instead
of
27-footer, where I don't know if Steph would have even had a chance to have the ball in that possession. So you're looking at a total of, from the 1-8-56 timeout to the timeout where he does come back in, you're looking at about 8 possessions either way. To me, it's not that big of a deal. Including 1 full minute of that, there was no stoppage. So you couldn't have gotten him in any sooner than you did when you finally called another timeout. I just think it's easy to second guess it. If Klay Thompson hits the 3 with 8 seconds left to tie that game and you go on to win, this is not even a topic of conversation.
It's still a topic of conversation.
Yeah,
okay,
I don't think so.
So let's pretend that Klay made that 3 to tie the game up and it goes to overtime.
Right.
You playing Steph all 5 minutes of overtime?
Probably. Yeah. At that point, I don't think that they would load manage him in overtime.
So play an extra minute or two of regulation and avoid going to overtime entirely.
Well, you brought Steph back at the 7-minute mark, basically.
And he was a big reason why you came back and tied the game.
You were down 8, so he was a +4 over the last 7 minutes of the game.
And there was a moment where you had tied the game. So for a brief period, he was +8 in like 5 minutes of game time.
And of which he scored 9 points. The rest of the way,
yeah.
Since he came back in.
Hit a big game-tying 3
yeah.
down the stretch.
To tie it at 104.
Yeah.
I just think that this is a case where it's process versus results, and the Warriors are absolutely married to their process. And their process was 30 minutes is what we're looking at. That was the target, and so...
The process has changed, though.
Well, it doesn't change. The results do not dictate the process. And I'm a results guy. But in this case, I know exactly what they're doing process-wise, and they're not going to change their beliefs or their process in order to chase the 10. If this was Game 5 of the NBA Finals, and it was a 2-2 series, he's probably playing 40 minutes. You're not going to worry about how tired he is, and that would be at game like 104 or whatever in a season.
It would probably be different, say, if they were on the edge of the 6-7 spot, if they were in danger of falling into the play-in or staying out of the play-in.
Or even if it was the play-in game, right?
Yeah, you're right.
If this was the play-in game, he's not playing 30.
Stakes matter, obviously.
Right.
For
me,
what is on the line is important.
Yeah, game 70 in the regular season. Is game 70 more important than tonight, game 71, or tomorrow, game 72? Probably not. And so they think if we burn him 34 minutes in this game, then maybe he's not as fresh when we need him tonight here at Miami.
Maybe. I don't know.
Process.
It just feels like the process has changed because Sunday was the 10th time this year Steph had played fewer than 30 minutes this whole season. Let's see. Let's run through them. January 7th, he played fewer than 30. That was the loss to Toronto at home when they were down by 27 at half. The reason he didn't play 30 that night was because he didn't need to play in the second half. The game was over. February 27th, it was an 11-point win in Washington. They led by 23 to start the fourth that game.
Yeah, Washington.
Didn't play because you were up big going into the fourth. Another one, Chicago. That was when he injured his ankle in the fourth quarter. That's why he didn't play 30 minutes in that game. You had an 8-point loss in Phoenix. That was the game where the bench was playing so great, the starters were playing so poorly that Steve Kerr said, you know what, Steph, Clay, Dre, take a seat on the bench. We're going to ride with Kuminga and Pajemski and company. There was another win against Washington. Same story. You're up big going into the fourth. Didn't play in the fourth quarter. Blowout loss to New Orleans. Steph, we're down by 40. You don't need to play in the entire second half, essentially. Blowout win against Philadelphia. Steph, you can sit out the whole fourth quarter. We've got a back-to-back coming up the next night anyway. A blowout win against Memphis just last week. And then the 52-point loss against Boston when he didn't play the whole second half. Like, those are the other instances of Steph Curry not reaching the minute mark he did not reach on Sunday. 9 of them make perfect sense. and then Sunday night. And I can't make sense of Sundays.
Well, all you have to do is look at the schedule. You look at the schedule and you see where we are, 70 games in. He's played 64. And coming up, you've got Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. So it's, and that's just the first six of a nine-game gauntlet. And you, everybody wants him to play 34, 35 minutes each and every night. That's not the way it works. You have to give at some point. And so they chose to give on game two of a pretty grueling road trip, five-game road trip over the course of 8 days, five cities, three time zones or two time zones. You got a back-to-back in there. I would imagine that if they win tonight, he might sit against Orlando, but then you have Charlotte on Friday. And I don't know if there still is that special, you know, Steph going home to Charlotte vibe, but that honestly, you've got Charlotte Friday, San Antonio Sunday. One of those two games would be the best time to sit him.
I mean, do you feel like you can beat either of those teams without Steph?
If you can't, then what are we even talking about?
Yeah, exactly.
What are we even talking about?
And they did beat the Spurs in San Antonio without him earlier, but they also lost to them at home without Steph.
Yeah.
So who knows what the hell is going to happen. All right, we'll get back into the Warriors in about an hour. Warriors Live starts at 3:30 ahead of Warriors and Heat in Miami at 4:30. It's Willard and Dibs here on 95.7 The Game. Grandy in for Willard. So Dibs and Grandy with you. We're going to talk about some Giants baseball coming up on the other side. Dibs, did you watch what Jordan Hicks did in Oakland last night?
He's nasty.
Woo. We got to talk about that. Some Giants excitement. I don't know about you. This is the most excited I've been for a Giants season in a really long time. 888-957-9570. That's the number to call. It's Grandy and Dibs here on Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. We are sponsored by Safeway.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Welcome back. Oh, gotta grab my mic, Mom.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back. It's Grandy in for Willard today. So Dibs and Grandy with you on Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. We'll get back to some basketball coming up in an hour when Warriors Live starts at 3:30 ahead of Warriors and Heat in Miami. But Dibs, going to the break, I teased the Giants. what they did in Oakland last night. I know it's just a preseason game, the end of spring training. It's the annual Bay Bridge Series ahead of the regular season, which begins on Thursday for the Giants as they take on the Padres down in San Diego. Last night was awesome for Jordan Hicks specifically. Struck out 10 over 5 innings, allowed just one hit, and we don't need to break down what happened in that game. But just in general, I mean, this is the most excited I've been about a Giants season in a really long time. They have legitimate expectations surrounding them now. They had an awesome offseason, and now we're just 2 days removed from the beginning of the regular season for everybody not named Dodgers and Padres. I'm juiced for this, Dibs. I've been excited the last couple of months, honestly, even before Chapman and Snell happened. But now that those two did happen, you've got a legitimate lineup. You've got a great rotation, or what you hope should be a great rotation, when they are fully healthy. I'm excited for Giants baseball. Legitimately pumped for the beginning of the season for the first time in a number of years.
Yeah, first time for me in the Fonzie era. And Jordan Hicks is actually a part of it. Maybe not the biggest part, but watching him last night throwing 98, and he's a guy who used to throw 102, 103, but now he's easing off it a little bit is the report. And so he's throwing a 98-mile-an-hour sinker, 97-mile-an-hour wipeout slider. And he's going to be your fifth starter, maybe fourth or fifth. He's down the rotation. And ultimately, when Robbie Ray comes back, he may have to fight for a spot in the rotation. But it's just another example of new pieces that Farhan's brought in. And he had himself a monster of an offseason. I didn't think that he had it in him, to be honest. But he closed Jung-Hoo Lee. He brought in Chapman. He had to wait for it, but he got Blake Snell, Jorge Soler, the DH, a guy who's got some pop, and then another kind of under-the-radar acquisition, Tom Murphy.
Two big flies.
Or should we call him Bomb Murphy, as I call him now, with the two flies. And he's hopefully not wasting them all in the spring. This team is better. The lineup is better. The rotation is better. The bullpen is probably as good as last year, still rock solid. The defense is better. The manager is better. Hard not to be more excited for this year's team than ever before under Farhan.
I'm trying to run through, like, when I was this excited or more excited for a Giants season. And you got to go way back. First of all, I agree with you. I don't think it's in the Farhan's ID era. The Farhan era began 2019. That was the end of Bochy. That was Bochy's final year. And they were coming off of a bad season, really no expectations there. So nothing there. Your next year, it's the COVID-shortened season, right? 2020 did not begin until deep into the summer,
right?
And that was a new manager. So you kind of had the excitement of, all right, we got a new era of baseball. We're kind of excited for it because the end of the Bochy era, while Bochy's a legend and that era of Giants baseball is the best era of Giants baseball in history, you weren't extremely confident that they were going to do much.
But honestly, the excitement of that season was the fact that they were playing baseball.
You're right. Just the fact that there was baseball at all, even just 60 games of it. Was
the opener was July 23rd.
Yeah.
And I just looked at that because I was trying to remember.
That's right around the trade deadline for normal years.
Exactly. It was a 60-game season. I was trying to remember when we actually got back to it because I was broadcasting from home, Jolo and Dibs days. And the only thing going was German soccer. I was a big Hertha Berlin fan at the time. Huh. And Union Berlin. And they had Korean baseball. Those are the only two leagues that were really popping in March. And then eventually you had the bubble NBA and then baseball July 23rd. So we were excited, but for a completely different reason.
Yeah. So that season off the table for me. 2021, when they actually won 107 games, that was an incredible season. So much fun, but you didn't have a ton of excitement going into it. Again, kind of the similar thing. It was the new era, first real year of Farhan and Gabe Kapler. And, you know, you had maybe some little bit of excitement for it because it was new, but you weren't really sure what to expect. And let's be honest, the talent on that team didn't blow you away. So it's not that year for me. The following year is maybe the one competitor, at least in the Farhan era, because you're coming off of 107 wins. But as you and I were talking about earlier during pre-show, Buster Posey retired that offseason. Yeah. You didn't make a ton of crazy moves. The talent on that roster wasn't great, so you didn't have a ton of expectations. And then last year, considering that they almost had Aaron Judge, they had Carlos Correa, and they didn't have him. that might have been the least excited I had been for a Giants season in a while. So I'm with you. I think it's this season, at least in the Farhan era, and the end of the Bochy era wasn't good either. You might have to go all the way back to like 2016, Dibs, to find the last time I was this excited about a Giants season.
And you have to go back to 2014 to find the last time the Giants won a postseason series, and that was the World Series.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a 2016, they lost in the NLDS, and same thing in 2021, so... You talk about excitement, and we are excited for this year's team because we have expectations. And the expectations now for this roster and this manager, this group of young players who eventually will come up, including Kyle Harrison, who's in the rotation, it feels like this team is going to get should as opposed to could put upon them.
Yes, and that's what brings me to my next point, which is you use the word expectations. With expectations comes a little bit of
great
a burden.
Responsibility, right?
Exactly. A burden. A burden of expectations on this Giants team. That's not something that they've really had to deal with, maybe, except for the 2022 year coming off of the 2021 season. But as we talked about, with no Posey and lack of talent around the rest of the roster, I'm not sure how much those of us that are Giants fans were really actually expecting from that team. But now you've got a legitimate ace alongside Logan Webb at the top of the rotation. You get Alex Cobb back, who was an all-star last year. In June or July, you hopefully get Robbie Ray back, who was a Cy Young Award winner a handful of seasons ago. Who knows what Jordan Hicks is going to turn into. You've got some young arms that you're relying on as well. Maybe Kyle Harrison has a great season and is a breakout candidate like Logan Webb was back in 2021. Who knows? And then you've got Matt Chapman, and you've got Jorge Soler, you've got Jung-Hoo Lee, and you've got some pieces that can hit the ball around a little bit. So this team, for the first time in a very long time, when we're talking about excitement from a fan perspective, from an inside perspective, and maybe this falls more so on Farhan than anybody else, because for some of those individual players, I mean, they haven't been around this franchise at all, like all the guys they just brought in. But for Farhan, he's now finally having to deal with what comes with having success in the offseason, which is, all right, now go prove it on the field. Up to this point, he hadn't had to deal with that. It was, well, the talent on this roster isn't very good. Let's aim for 80 wins. And if we get 80 wins, we're feeling pretty good about ourselves, because look at the talent we have versus look at the talent the Dodgers have. But now you've got not equal talent, but comparable talent.
Yeah.
And now,
sure,
as a result, you got to go out there and prove it and actually win more games than you lose this year.
And you hope that Bob Melvin can manage this team and do better than he did in San Diego when he had ostensibly as much, if not more, talent on that roster. And yet last year they disappointed for the first 5 months of the season. And San Diego started to get rolling, but it was too little too late. They only managed to get up to third in the division. So Bob Melvin is in a spot where, not that he needs a, quote, bounce back, but he inherits a roster far better than what Gabe Kapler left. And that's credit to Farhan Zaidi for doing great things in the offseason and putting together a very well-rounded team with a good rotation. You mentioned a good lineup. The defense is vastly improved, and it's a deeper team as well. So even when you sustain the inevitable injuries, as we know is a part of any baseball season, it feels like you've got more talent waiting in AAA that you'll be able to bring back up.
You mentioned the improved lineup for Bob Melvin. Do you remember who started at catcher for the Giants on opening day last year? They started in the Bronx in New York against the Yankees.
Was it Chadwick Trump?
It was not Chadwick Trump, okay. But that's a great pull, dude.
Well, just based on your smile and your smirk, it's probably not somebody that I would expect to be.
It is not.
Was it Joey Bart?
It was not Joey Bart.
Not Joey Bart.
Joey Bart started the 2022
opener. It wasn't Blake Sable, I don't think.
Blake Sable started, but he did not catch.
He did not catch. Man, there's somebody I'm clearly forgetting.
He was a Giant for like a minute.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Roberto Perez.
It's funny because Evan whispered the answer in my ear, but I didn't know his first name, so I didn't. I was going to say Eugenio Perez. Probably not. Evan said Perez, And I was thinking to myself, I could guess a first name, but then I looked like even more of an idiot than not knowing it. Thank you, Evan, for the effort.
Yeah, Roberto
Next
Perez.
Time I'm going to need a first name. Thank you, brother.
Roberto?
Is that just me? No.
Roberto Perez was Never the team's starting catcher Never last year on opening day. Now, there was like some injuries and whatever.
Right.
But yeah, Roberto Perez was this team's starting catcher. I'm glad you brought up Blake Sable because Blake Sable also started opening day last year. He was the starting left fielder.
Crazy.
And he actually continued the crazy stretch of same player Giants starting in left field on opening days. You have to go all the way back to Barry Bonds in 2006 and 2007 to find the last time the same Giants started in left field on consecutive opening days.
So this year will be somebody different as well.
This year will be the 18th consecutive unless Austin Slater, it won't be consecutive.
Right.
Austin Slater had started an opening day and left, he didn't start last year. More than likely, it will be Conforto starting in left on opening day. Even if it is Luis Matos, which some fans want, you're going to have a new left fielder again for the 18th consecutive season on opening
Probably
day.
Conforto, and then next year will be Matos, which will keep the streak alive.
Yeah, we got to get to 20.
There's some the names on there are pretty hilarious, too, if you go back in time. From all the...
We got Nori Aoki. We got Connor Joe.
Connor Joe is the one.
Fred Lewis.
F. Lou.
Mark DeRosa.
D. Rowe.
Aubrey Huff started in left field on opening day in 2012.
Don't talk about that.
Yeah, we don't need to talk about that anymore. Dave Roberts started in left field.
The Dave Roberts?
Yeah, the Dave Roberts in 2008. It's a who's who of not important baseball players, really.
Totally.
Ever since the Barry Bonds time. But I bring it up because you're right. The lineup is much improved this year. I mean, you look at who they're probably going to start, and we can look at the lineup for tonight as the Bay Bridge preseason series shifts to Oracle Park to close out the preseason slate for both these two teams. This is just about going to be the starting lineup for the Giants this year, Dibs. You got Jung-Hoo Lee leading off, Matt Chapman, then Lamont Wade, then Jorge Soler, then Michael Conforto, then Tyro Estrada, and then Austin Slater, Patrick Bailey, and Nick Ahmed. Really, the only change is likely going to be Yastrzemski in for Slater playing right field. That's probably the only change for the Giants opening day lineup.
Against righties, you'd have Yaz, and Slater will go up against the lefties, you'd imagine.
Yeah, but that is, considering what last year was, which featured Jock Peterson, and it featured Blake Sable, and it featured Roberto Perez, and it featured Wilmer Flores, although Wilmer is a good hitter, and it featured Brandon Crawford. That is a much deeper, better lineup with a lot more thump, some scary bats, some tough at-bats for pitchers, guys that will work counts. So you've got a lineup that looks entirely different from last year. And again, now you've got to deal with the expectations. Like if you're Farhan Zaidi, Dibs, and you come into this season thinking about, what's the goal for this franchise this year? You felt like 80 wins last year was like they overachieved because of the lack of talent on their roster. Now you come into this year with that lineup, with that starting pitching staff, and you've got to wonder, what are they aiming for? What are they shooting for? And what would be considered a success and what would be considered a failure? It's much higher up, at least in my opinion, than it was last year or really any of the last like 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, and it's much further up than it was a couple of months ago. According to FanDuel, the over-under season total now is 83.5. And it had been sitting at either 80.5 or 81.5 up until the acquisition of Chapman and Snell. And now the money's come in and the over, actually the under is the favorite at 83.5, but I think that the bar is set at the playoffs because the National League is such that you've got at least four teams who are all but giving up already in March. And so your field of teams that you're competing with goes from 15 down to 11. So there's really only 11 teams legitimately going for six playoff spots. And you've got one of the biggest offseason expenditures in baseball. You brought in a lot more talent. You've got an infusion of youth likely coming this year. You've got no excuses, in my opinion, to not be a playoff team, to not be a team that can win 85 or so games and be a part of the wild card race.
Does 83.5 feel low to you? That feels low to me.
A little bit, but you're kind of protecting against what could possibly happen with the pitching, and I think when you're a team that is so reliant on pitching, their offense is better, but this team is going to rise and fall with their pitching. And if you have an injury or if a guy has a bad year, you suddenly look at a team and a staff that's going to be replete with a lot of young arms. Even Logan Webb is a young pitcher. If Harrison doesn't pop, then you're left with Snell. Robbie Ray's coming back from Tommy John. Cobb is 36 coming back from injury. That, to me, would be the reason that the number would be a little lower.
I mean, you won 79 games last year. You won 81 the year before. Obviously, 107 is proving to be an outlier from 2021. But if you managed to get right around 80 each of the last 2 years with that talent on those rosters, I feel like 83.5, just getting 84, feel like that would be a little disappointing for me. I feel like there's a legitimate reason to believe that this team can win 90 games this year.
90's aggressive.
I think they can.
Well, of course,
I mean, injuries matter and all of that. But, I mean, you get around July in the back half of the season and you're trotting out a couple of Cy Young Award winners and Logan Webb and Kyle Harrison and Jordan Hicks or whoever gets pushed out of the rotation and Alex Cobb, who was an all-star last year. You're looking at one of the better rotations in baseball. And you've got a much improved starting lineup. I mean, the Giants would have killed to have the starting pitching staff that they're projected to have this year, either of the last 2 years. And they still managed to be right around 500.
Yeah.
I don't know how, I mean, things can go poorly, and maybe we could talk about what happens if they do. But if things work out at least somewhat decently, I feel like 83, 84 wins is near the team's floor.
Yeah, the floor is probably a little lower than that, but I do think that the ceiling is closer to 90, 91, especially with the balanced schedule. So you're not going to have to go up against the Dodgers 19 times like you did back when the schedule was an unbalanced schedule. Now you will have an opportunity to feed on some of the bad teams that you wouldn't normally play as often as you do, especially National League teams that are probably going to struggle this year.
Would you rather... Okay, so... I think the conversation about the burden of expectations, it honestly probably falls more on Farhan Zaidi more than anything else. Because if you're a Farhan, say, last year, Dibs, or even 2 years ago, obviously you were under fire, right? You've been under fire because of shortcomings in the offseason. And maybe, you know, you didn't make a move at the trade deadline. But ultimately, what you gave your manager, Gabe Kapler, and the talent that was on the roster wasn't all that impressive. So if you're Farhan Zaidi and you go out there with that roster and you win 81 games as they did in 2022, 79 games in 2023, you could legitimately go up to your boss or to others around baseball, or you could explain this to your fans. Not that it would be smart to do so, but you could, and say, hey, look what we did with this.
Right.
That's honestly impressive. You should be happy with what we were able to accomplish this year, given what was on the roster. Now, everyone will fire back and say, well, get better players on the roster. Now he's done that. So is this ultimately a little bit more of an uncomfortable season for Farhan Zaidi, especially if things kind of teeter around 500 for a portion of the season? Because you have the expectations of having all this talent,
right,
and having a successful offseason. If now that gets followed up with a relatively similar win total from each of the last 2 years, there is that much more on Farhan Zaidi because, yes, he spent money, but maybe he didn't spend it in the right way.
I think the pressure lies more on Bob Melvin because Farhan Zaidi went out and did what he was supposed to do, which was spend money and bring in talent. You brought in Snell, making a lot. You brought in Chapman. I know they have opt-outs, but just for this year, these are high-priced talent. You paid a lot for Jung-Hoo Lee for the next 5 years, so he's on the club. You brought in a slugger and Jorge Soler. Farhan Zaidi went out and did what the fans asked him to do, make the roster better. So for me, the pressure lies more on Bob Melvin, especially after Bob Melvin's year last year in San Diego. And I know the Padres were a little bit of a mess, but you look at that roster, especially that batting lineup, and we all were looking last year thinking this is a 90-win team for sure. Maybe they can push the Dodgers with Tatis and Machado and Cronenworth and all the rest of the talent that they had down in San Diego. And I'm not saying it was Bob Melvin's fault, but ultimately as the manager, you're responsible to manage the club. And I know A.J. Preller, the GM, and Bob didn't get along great. And it was kind of a broken situation in more ways than just the clubhouse, but they underperformed. Bottom line, Bob Melvin as a skipper, that team underperformed. So for me, coming here, you're replacing Gabe Kapler, and we know that there were problems in the clubhouse here last year, and Bob's come in and taken an old-school approach, and I hope it resonates, and early reports are that it is resonating down there at 3rd and King. Your team is better. Your skipper is better. All eyes on the Giants, but I think if it falls short of expectation, the first look for me would be into the dugout, not into the suite.
So you feel like Farhan is safe from the wrath of Giants fans this season?
I think he's safe. I think he should be safe, in my opinion, because he did what every Giants fan, including myself, has been saying that he can't do. You can't sign a nine-figure deal, Jung-Hoo Lee. You can't go out there and win in the big free agent pool. He swam with Boris. He signed three Boris clients.
And he made a terrible joke.
Yeah, he sure did, including Chapman and Snell. But he waited till the end, but he got Snell. And he landed Chapman, and it was a little bit later than anyone wanted, but you got a starting third baseman, you brought in a slugger, you brought in the Cy Young Award winner from last year, so now you have first and second place from last year's Cy Young in your rotation. I don't know how you can look at Farhan. Let's say they are 32 and 38 after 70 games. I don't know if I would look at the roster. If they're struggling, I don't know if I'd look at Farhan and say, well, yeah, you shouldn't have brought in Blake Snell if Snell starts out 3-4 with a 4.2 ERA and he's just not as good as he was last year. Is that Farhan's fault?
Why wouldn't it be?
Because he went out and brought in a guy with a track record, a Cy Young Award winner, a guy who has been dominant. Farhan can't go out there and get outs.
We also know Snell's track record between his two Cy Youngs. I mean, he's had not great seasons. He's had not great stretches. He's had really bad stretches of pitching.
Yeah.
He was not great to begin last year for the Padres. Even when he was pitching well, he'll walk like five guys a night. Like he was a Cy Young winner. He's great, and the Giants are better with him. But there is a reality in which maybe he doesn't start well. Maybe Jung-Hoo Lee struggles to adjust to major league pitching. Maybe he hits .220 for the first month and a half of the season. That's not on Bob Melvin. That's on Farhan for potentially identifying, signing, paying too much for that guy.
Well, Jung-Hoo Lee is a different case for me because he is an unproven talent in Major League Baseball.
And he's the only guy that was signed to a major multi-year deal.
Right, so that to me is a different story than Snell. Blake Snell was highly sought after, and he has got a good track record. He's got a mixed track record, I suppose, over the course of his career, but he's coming off a Cy Young year, and he's played for Bob Melvin. I'm sure Bob Melvin vouched for him. Otherwise, they don't bring him in. So that, to me, is less about Farhan and more about the player himself. Jung-Hoo Lee, I'll buy that because that, to me, was a bit of a stretch because none of us have ever seen him. So far, so good in spring. He looks the part. And if Jung-Hoo Lee pops, that's absolutely a feather in Farhan's cap.
Yeah, it's a feather in his cap if he pops, but if he struggles, what happens there? It's interesting. Is Farhan Zaidi free of pressure and free of the wrath of Giants fans for this season, given what he was able to accomplish this offseason? 888-957-9570, and what are your expectations for the Giants this year? Are you going to be disappointed if they win only 84 games? Their over-under set at 83.5. That feels low to me. I feel like this team can win 90 games. What is a success for you for this Giants season? And again, is Farhan Zaidi free of your wrath, you Giants fans out there? Are you at least giving him the season off from the wrath? Maybe it picks up again in the offseason, but is he free of your wrath at this very moment? Because, Dibs, what if Snell struggles? Say he goes 9-10 with a 4.3 ERA, and say Jung-Hoo Lee hits .220, and Soler hits .230 and only 17 bombs, and Chapman good defensively but hits 13 home runs and hits .235. Like, your big prized free agents that you finally got struggle. That's got to be on the guy calling the shots and bringing those guys in.
Yeah, essentially. If you get to the end of the year and you wind up 81-81 and those players have those years, I suppose you're going to blame Farhan Zaidi. But for me, I'm hesitant to do so because
it's got to be freeing for him. The pressure's off.
Well, I think the pressure's mostly off. He went out there and did his level best. And we all are sitting here thinking those are great acquisitions, all of them across the board. So if they don't play well, that's on the player.
Yeah.
Not on Farhan.
I like it. What do you think? Is the pressure completely off of Farhan Zaidi for this season as we're now 2 days away from opening day? It's Dibs and Grandy with you. I'm in for Mark Willard today here on 95.7 The Game. We do have some injury news as well here for the Lakers, or pardon me, for the Warriors and Heat game in Miami. No Jimmy Butler, no Kevin Love, no Tyler Hero, no Duncan Robinson. We knew about Love, Hero, and Robinson, but Jimmy Butler is out today as well with a non-COVID illness for the Miami Heat. More on that coming up in half an hour when Warriors Live gets underway at 3:30. But for now, time for a break. It's Dibs and Grandy with you here on 95.7 The Game. We are presented by Fremont Bank. Full service banking, no compromises.
That's a lot of outs, Grandy, but one thing that is in is Fremont Bank. Fremont Bank is in. It's in my life. They're a family-owned bank, and it's a family-owned feel. I feel like I'm a part of the family. I walk into my home branch right there in Oakland. They know me. I'm a person. I'm not just a series of numbers. They have my money. I trust that they have my money. Fremont Bank, proudly celebrating 60 years in business. And they set out to build not just a bank, but a local ecosystem built on relationships. They're proudly independent, active members of the community. They support local nonprofits and are a top local corporate philanthropist. They reinvest the money, my money, into local businesses, and I love that. They support hard-earned businesses locally, family-owned businesses, and homeownership right here in the Bay Area. They support nonprofits, and they make many meaningful grants for the betterment of all of us here in the Bay Area. It's Fremont Bank, full-service banking, no compromises.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.